read the synopsis, I thought it said E.T.'s death from AIDS a year later.
It was the 80s.
Yeah.
We don't know how he ended up passed out in that creek.
That's true. It could have been AIDS.
The following is a Mediocre Movie Club production.
Welcome back to the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. This week, we'll be discussing E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Straight Outta Compton. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight is Drew Landry.
Anybody want a peanut?
And Shane Suttner.
Yo.
I forgot about last names there. You give up your anonymity when you join the MMC.
Yeah, I think that's the deal. We only stay semi... what's the word I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Anonymous? Semi-anonymous? Okay. Yeah, it's a hard word.
I mean, that's the contract I signed.
When you're not MMC, we'd like to say, hey, your name is Jake N, or, and then later on go, your name is Jay Narduli.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that shout out. I'm sure he's still listening after Game of Thrones has ended. Yeah. Just like all of our many, many podcast
fans. Tens, possibly.
Ten hundreds.
Twos of fans.
Hey, we have like 71 likes on Facebook.
That is true.
I feel like that's underselling it, but we're taking off like a rocket ship, Drew.
We are.
We had to fight off so many members to get this podcast recorded tonight just because they really want to get their voices out there.
We had to tell them no.
We did. We did. It's just us three tonight to discuss my pick in E.T. the Extraterrestrial and Blair Sutner's pick in Straight Outta Compton. She is not joining us tonight, but that's okay. We'll be able to bang out some strong conversation in her absence. Although she would have made it stronger, no question.
Mm-hmm.
Our first movie that we're going to talk about, E.T., Steven Spielberg's iconic childhood classic. His first kid-centric film after making stuff like Jaws and Raiders of the Lost Ark and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. It's obviously about a boy who finds a dim-witted alien. It's also one of Spielberg's most memorable, regularly spoofed and paid homage to movies from probably shortly thereafter through the present day. So I'm wondering about you guys' like prior relationships to E.T. I picked this movie. It was another one of those 80s blind spots that I'm constantly trying to remedy through the Mediocre Movie Club.
Were you not allowed to watch this movie?
Just never came up.
Okay, just checking.
The Jesus metaphor is pretty blasphemous for my parents.
There's a Jesus metaphor here.
Is there not? I mean, an alien comes back from the dead. Sounds like Jesus to me.
That's pretty minimal. I don't know. I got a client named Jesus
who
got
power
in a car
of love,
accident,
like his
came
heart.
Back from the dead. But
you've never seen like the Catholic symbol of like the heart with the crown of thorns around it.
Well, yeah,
he's got his heart that like throbs red when he's coming back to life. There's a lot of strong Christian imagery in there.
Okay, well,
I think you have to look for it really hard though. I wasn't finding it too much in there.
I mean, Matthew 4:15. And then Jesus stretched his neck to look up over the crowd to see exactly how many loaves and fishes he needed. I think that's directly related to E.T.'s really long neck.
To his neck?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I didn't write the Bible. It's in there.
That's a stretch.
Hey-o.
Hey-o.
Oh, dear.
So my prior relationship to E.T., obviously I watched it as a kid. Many, many times, and I also rode the ride probably a dozen times at Universal Studios.
Is the ride better or worse than the movie?
I think it's on par. I think it's the same thing.
About the same
thing.
It's about the same. It's about the same. And
I don't know about that.
It's high regards. Have you been on the ride, Drew?
Yes, I have.
You didn't like it?
I like the ride.
You didn't like this movie?
Is it a roller coaster? What kind of ride are we talking about?
Have you ever been to Universal Studios?
No. Animatronic type stuff.
It's like animatronics mixed with kind of roller coaster, like... They'll have some like guy in the front, like the Jaws. You have like you're in a boat.
Sure.
And they have some college student at the front going, oh shit. I mean, not shit. Sorry, everyone. oh no, there's a Jaws machine.
Parents
I mean,
laugh.
Animal.
Or the kids laugh and the parents give a stern look.
Like, my dad's like, I couldn't bring my beer on this.
You ride supervisor, you.
I threw out a $12 beer to get on this ride.
That's a shame. That's a shame.
Yes.
So he would say that the movie was better than the ride.
Probably. Yeah, who knows?
We'll have to do some auditing.
Sure, my dad probably got drunk for both of them. Drew, what was your prior relationship?
I saw it once when I was 9, or 10. When my older brother saw it a few other times, I was watching it with them. And there's a couple things I always remembered about it. It was the Reese's Pieces.
Right.
And E.T. Phone Home and Be Good. And that was all that I really remembered from it. And then I watched it again, and I thought, why is this so iconic? I don't know why I'm watching this.
Yeah, it's I agree with Drew. Like, I think it's a good enough movie as it is. It's a fine I've talked about on the site that, you know, like, kids movies, I don't really necessarily believe in kids movies. I think a movie is a movie, depending, and the audience shouldn't really make any difference as far as how intelligent or complex it can be. I've seen plenty of complex kids movies, and I've seen plenty of brain dead movies that are pitched towards adults. But yeah, E.T., it's pitched so specifically to an emotional wavelength that if that's not working for you, I feel like this movie is really putting itself at a disadvantage. It's hard for that wavelength not to hit because the John Williams score is just beating you over the head with strings and horns and whatever else, other kind of instruments he uses, to get the maximum emotional response possible.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't quite work on me, even as I can admire it for being, you know, a well-made movie. Shane, you're shaking your head.
I don't know how you don't feel like some sort of emotion towards your own childhood and wonder, and just thinking like, man, everything is so new. Like, I don't know. It's like this is a really good movie that puts you back in the mindset of when you're a kid. Like, just, I don't know. Like, don't you remember being curious about shit? Or are you?
I'm still curious about
shit. Still dead inside.
I don't feel like I ever lost that trait necessarily. It would be pretty. I would stare open mouthed at an alien in my closet.
Right.
I happen to have one.
Yeah. Yeah. See, I felt the same way about the Transformers, and I know you hate the Transformers, Shane. But the first time I saw that, I remember Optimus Prime. There he is, and there's Megatron, and there's Bumblebee.
Wait, are you talking about the cartoon?
No.
The movie.
Yes,
the movie. Michael Bay movie.
The Michael Bay
yes.
movie.
Yes, the first
oh,
one.
Oh, so bad.
Oh dear, Drew. Oh dear.
But that's what I'm telling you.
What was the best part? Was it when he brought his camera directly underneath a character who was ostensibly a high school junior's skirt and, like, really looked up at her butt?
I didn't even make it that far. I don't even know. I don't remember where I made it to.
It seemed like the first 10 minutes.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
You got to get those teenage boys to stay in their seats, lest everyone see their boner.
Well,
but that's
Megan
not a
Fox
movie.
Was quite the thing after that particular
right.
film.
Well, does yeah. Michael Bay have to treat her like such a...
Drew Barrymore was a thing like at least 14, 15 years after this too. But the Transformers, it's just that movie was so emotionless. It was just a bunch of CGI running around and crazy McFace.
But
buff. But it was like no wonder involved. Like, this is all
no.
about
yeah.
like the stakes in Transformers are so high where the whole world is at, like, could be dead. And this one is just like, we got Keys coming after us. The character Keys. I
sure.
think that's the
yes,
name, right?
Keys.
And it wasn't even an inappropriate response. I mean, they're very sloppy for a government organization, but our stakes are just like, it's just a kid's life, one kid's life. And like, there's so much more emotion packed into it rather than like hundreds of thousands of people die in Transformers and no one cared about them.
Nobody. No, it's a happy ending.
Well, here's the thing though. Here's why I'm saying that. I mean, you're talking about childhood wonder and the things that you're like, oh wow, that is so cool. I love that cartoon when it was back in the 80s. That was one of my favorite things to watch. I thought if only that could be like a real thing. And so when it came out as a movie, I didn't expect it to be something spectacular. I expected it to be kind of just what it was. And I thought, oh, okay, that I could enjoy this.
I think in the
and
context of
and then they
the
just made more and made more and made more, and it was awful and awful and awful.
They were all awful.
But
within the context of nostalgia, I mean, just like that first movie, the cartoon, you don't have to like the Michael Bay ones. he doesn't give a shit. He just wants to make stuff blow up real good and take his paycheck back home and make actresses wash his car to determine whether or not they're going to be in his movie or not. True story.
Well, that's fine for Michael Bay. That's the good for capitalism. Okay, whatever. But it's like this little kid in me that wants to say, okay, I really want to watch that movie just so I can see Optimus Prime and hear the same voice that was on the cartoon.
No
that
surprise was really neat. The delegate from Texas is super pro-capitalism.
Well, here in Georgia, we favor her more.
Yeah, that's right. Georgia, we're purple right now. Yeah.
It's all about freedom.
Freedom.
Freedom. Guns. Freedom.
Freedom to ogle a high school student. And so, expect a pat on the back.
Well, Friday Night Lights, big deal down here, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, that's a good, that's a great show. Here or there. E.T.
So I feel like I caught the last back half of the movie last night, finally, and just watching them take off, and fly, which I know is a plot hole, because he could have flown the whole time, maybe. I don't know. I don't know if I buy it as a plot hole, because if the spaceship is taking off, maybe you don't fly into the wake of it. Probably. This is probably something you don't do. But, take off and fly, I got goosebumps. It's just, and the kid, I don't know, the kids pulled it off. I know the stuntmen, they all had the mask on.
Sure.
Whatever. I thought it was goofy.
It's a reasonable
compromise. Just something kids would do is you put like a whatever mask on or big glasses, a hat on, because they're doing something important because kids are goofy as shit and they're dumb. And I'm fine with all of it. I'm fine with the chase was great. Actually, I think you said last night you were pretty cool with the chase, right?
Yeah. It is a little of the time. I don't know when motocross got super cool.
That's true.
That was a video game.
Excite Bike or whatever. A few years later, they would have been skateboarding. But in that moment, I don't know. It was cool to dirt bike, so they're dirt biking. Whatever. I don't necessarily have issues with the plot of the movie. I think you do have to buy a lot of E.T.'s powers and the general. I called him dim-witted in the synopsis. Yeah, that alien's pretty dumb, considering he's part of a civilization that's able to cross different solar systems with no problem, if not galaxies. You just expect a level of sophistication and not ouches. I feel like an alien that could travel through amongst the stars would be the neurotransmitters in my appendage are firing, and he would just be very intelligent. He wouldn't say, ouch.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem. You're guessing at this. He's a botanist. Why couldn't E.T. have been...
Yeah, he's a scientist.
Yes, why couldn't he have been autistic as shit? He's a really stupid scientist.
He didn't really do anything with the plants besides put his essence into one that, tracked his death a la Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, he had no idea how to communicate with people. Barely can make eye contact. It's autistic.
But he should be able to have some interest or focus in the rest of the world.
Yeah, got too focused in the plants and got left behind.
I guess he does build his phone, but
yeah,
too focused on in your contact, E.T.
One of the extras that says he's vaccinated.
E.T. has the wonder and the awe that you're talking about with the kids, and that's why he gets left behind, and I'm sure that's why him and Elliot get along so well.
All jokes aside, adding more jokes eventually, I think it's great. He's got the awe and wonder, and Elliot's got the awe and wonder, and he's like, hey, come with me at the end of the movie. To me, that's pretty interesting that we're watching two totally different characters who don't entirely get each other interact like that. I don't know. This is all in wonder. It's a curiosity. Curiosity is super important, and it's maybe the one of the things of childhood we do tend to lose as we get to be adults because we're, every day working and whatnot. And we lose curiosity. Well, some of us. Let me check myself because I'm working with someone who's fun employed right now and a professor, so I know neither one of you guys really work.
I just don't work 3 hours on an hourly job,
Drew's in his tower. Drew's in his tower made of ivory, and I'm in my tower made of athletic shorts and t-shirts.
I'm in my tower made of just dirty money.
Fair enough.
Hourly.
I feel like that the argument you're making, Shane, would resonate more if there was anybody in the movie that didn't have awe. And I don't think there is. The mom might
Keys.
Be. No, Keys is very excited to
yeah, be well, he's an alien, but he's not really in awe. He's, like,
he's very much in awe.
How about all those other dudes who
doesn't
are just
he
like,
say
how
something?
About all the red shirts? All the red
doesn't
shirts.
He,
no one really cares.
The
they
movie's
care.
Only so long. I believe that Keys says something to Elliot, like, you're very lucky. I've wanted this my whole life, too. He's just
fair.
As invested in the presence of an alien as anyone else.
And he does come across as like a human being as opposed to the rest of the red shirts from the government.
Yes. And with the government having the intentions that they do, which seem to be pretty benign or strictly scientific, that's such another problem with this movie. There isn't really that much conflict. Like, E.T. is dying somehow, and until he magically springs back to life. There's just not a lot. There's not a lot here. There's not a lot in E.T. If you're not connecting to that emotional wavelength. And like you mentioned, the chills that you got during certain sequences, I did not get any of those.
Yeah.
And I was just watching Gangs of New York, and even though that movie is like sliding down in my estimation of it, I still got plenty
crazy.
Of chills during that.
Don't let it slide
plenty
down.
Of chills during that. So it's not like I'm incapable of connecting to a movie, just not E.T.
Well,
you connect pretty well to Ratatouille.
I love Ratatouille. Ratatouille is a masterpiece. It's the best thing Pixar's
Deep
ever
grab,
done.
Drew.
I don't
there
know. That's a fine statement to make. The last question to ask about E.T. This is a semi-autobiographical movie for Spielberg. He's also a child of divorce, like the kids in the movie. Why can't he just make a movie about kids without either an alien showing up on their doorstep or the dad being Peter Pan? Why can't he just make him? Why does he have to do all this extra spectacle? Because I feel like that movie would be really great because the scenes of just the kids interacting and the mom interacting with the kids, like, those are really felt lived in scenes. And I wish he would just make something like Kramer versus Kramer, where it's just about a family going through a divorce.
Or Mrs. Doubtfire.
He did not make Mrs. Doubtfire.
Oh, goodness gracious.
Though it's right in his wheelhouse as far as that goes.
Oh, that
Drew,
was so awful.
Drew, I have an answer for this, so why don't you answer first? You have a really good answer.
No, you go ahead, because I don't have a good answer for this. I mean, Spielberg, he's this iconic director, and John's probably right. He could make a movie about this.
Yeah, he could absolutely.
I don't know why he has to use an alien. Maybe it's to add more to the story. Maybe
make it more
marketable.
Maybe
that could also be it. That's all I got. I mean, Shane, you go for it.
Have you ever heard of the parable the scorpion and the frog?
Sure, yeah. It's
yep.
nature.
Yeah, right. So for those of you who have not heard this, if you're a Notre Dame football fan, you've definitely heard this. But so the scorpion asked the frog for a ride over a river, right? And the frog is like, hell no, you're just going to stab me with your scorpion thing, right?
It's the technical name for it.
Yeah. And he's like, why would I do that? We'd both drown. And the frog's like, well, that makes sense. So it picks him on his back and starts swimming across, and the scorpion just stings him. And they both drown. And the lesson is, you are what you are, right?
Mm-hmm.
Spielberg is what he is. Like, he's just good at supernatural. Why are we asking him to do something else? That's just an insane question to ask.
That didn't stop Steven Spielberg from making a movie about Tom Hanks stuck in an airport. There's no magic in that movie.
Fair enough.
Well, there's some romantic. There's some romance.
Well,
there's some comedy
to be
there.
Fair. How
does
planes get in the air? That shit's magic.
That's a whimsical movie, The Terminal. But he's made his share of serious movies too.
Right.
No wizard comes across the Holocaust and waves his magic wand, and suddenly all the Jews are free.
Unless you're Charlie Chaplin.
Exactly. He like Schindler made his Holocaust
movie.
Iron
Pan, Drew. Thank you.
Dude, those scenes were so funny.
The wizard waves his cast iron
pan. It never got old. Oh, the whole cast iron pan.
It never got old. I just laughed every single
DJ
time.
DJ plus.
I just have to ask this question, and I hope somebody can answer it for me. I didn't understand this part. When he's making his call home, E.T., and then Elliot falls asleep, and then E.T.'s gone, and he's found in a creek, like white as a ghost. How did he get there?
Yeah, nothing. No idea.
I actually did not watch that 30 minutes movie.
There's no information in the movie about that at all.
Yeah, there are some serious potholes. There are some serious potholes in the movie. I'm not going to argue against that. So it's not a movie. It's not a minus movie. It's a B plus movie.
Oh,
I don't know.
Shane
about
bringing his grade down a little. Well, I mean, we have it as a B.
Grade.
We have it as
I
a B.
I think my grade was, wasn't it? No, is it?
I might give it
minus.
A minus.
I might give it a minus. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Drew, we gave it both Bs. I think, right?
I think I gave it well.
Okay,
so maybe you guys.
You're
talking
right. I'm thinking
minus because of John Williams and the music. The music was fantastic.
It was way too much. It was way too much music.
I don't. I have to disagree with you on that one. But I thought that's what kept it in the. You know, enjoyable range for me was his scores.
You know, Drew, what I'm thinking of is our next movie, Straight Outta Compton, where
yes.
that we both
speaking
gave,
of music
that we both
yeah speaking of music, good segue.
Thank you. This movie from 2015, smash hit about the foundational rap group N.W.A. They get the biopic treatment in F. Gary Gray's film, produced by Ice Cube and Dr. Dre, among others. The film gives a presumably firsthand account of the group's formation, success, and eventual dissolution, stretching from their teenage lives to Eazy-E's death from AIDS a decade later.
That does not say E.T.'s death.
No, again. It does not. this movie's produced some conversation on our site. I find it really interesting. I wrote a really long review about it, so did Bobby. His was more positive. In the context of like the historical accuracy of the movie, because Bobby was just more online in this world, online being like paying attention to the world of NWA and like this early gangster rap. That was one of his focuses, whereas mine was like, can this movie be anywhere close to historically accurate when the people it's portraying are the people that stand to both have their legacy propped up by its success and not to mention like getting a lot of money from its success. Mm-hmm. Bobby claimed that it was pretty accurate in a lot of instances. Do you guys have any thoughts about the historical accuracy of this movie, if it even matters, because it is a movie and not a documentary?
Well, I think it does matter to be accurate because, so I'll say this, like movies and TV shows, TV, like whatever, shit gets whitewashed. I get that. And there's just only so much you can portray. But you can have some accuracy with it. Like it bothers me when things are so unrealistic that you can't do even fiction shit like Daredevil. I cannot stand the shitty lawyer the stuff. Like, come on. Just have some shit right. Just get something right. Don't just make shit up out of whole cloth. Like,
well, they practice law, isn't that right?
In the sense that they are in a court.
Sure. Sure. I don't know if you call that practicing law, mutilating.
They have an office.
They do have an office. That is accurate.
I think the words "Your Honor" are spoken in that movie.
Yeah,
at least once.
Yeah. But they didn't say it in a Southern voice, so it does not count. You say "Your Honor," it is only appropriate to say "As Your Honor."
And someone probably objects, but it might have been Colin.
Objection!
Colin Farrell's villain objecting to not. I don't know, throwing stuff in the right direction.
Yeah, I do declare, Yana, this is
a terrible, terrible Colin Farrell impression.
Irrelevant.
I say boy.
My client's a good boy now. Anyway, Where did I go with that? So, and story of accuracy. I think, I mean, if you're going to do a biopic, you have some accuracy. Just like, what was it? What's the Heath Ledger Knight movie?
A Knight's Tale?
A Knight's Tale. A lot of historical accuracy in that.
No, we will rock you. Classic 12th century anthem.
So part of that.
Yeah. Biopics need some level of historical accuracy. I call these kind of movies fatally flawed in my review, because that level of historical accuracy is going to get the stamp of approval by the people that the movie is about. And like this, Stranded Account was pretty controversial about what it left out. Like the Dr. Dre of the movie is a pretty good guy. He's a loyal person. He loves his family. He doesn't seem to go as hog wild into the party scene as like Eazy-E does. However, at this time in real life, he was like running up a pretty long abuse record that was not depicted at all in the movie. And it was happening in the time frame of this movie, and it's just completely cut out. Completely cut out. And then you also have like Ice Cube in the movie. He is, in every situation, he's always right. And stop. And if there's like countermanding evidence, please, I'd love to hear it if I'm forgetting something. But just every conversation he has, he's either speaking truth, telling truth to his bandmates or the cops or reporters or whoever. And I mean, he's on set. He very well might have. I'm sure he had a hand in writing the script. It just feels a little gross. And I would say the same thing about any biopic. I don't want to sound like I'm picking on NWA for any reason, because those flaws are really baked into this movie. Other than if you can get past those flaws, it's a really fun movie. There's a lot of really great stuff here. Drew, before we move on to that great stuff, you want to weigh in at all on Country Lawyers or whatever else we've been talking about?
Well, I don't really meet a lot of country lawyers, but if I ever do, I'll hope that they're from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham, and Howe. But
nice. By the way, there's a really, if anyone wants to listen to some Texas lawyers in a Texas deposition, there's a really good deposition of a Texas, I think it's a Texas oil man, but you look up Texas lawyer deposition, and if you say insepid, it's the best. It's the best 3 minutes of a deposition of all time. It's
interesting.
Absolutely fantastic.
Anyway, I'm
not interested.
I hear so much stuff. You know, they say if you're getting ready to do something, they say I'm a fixin'. I don't know what. I still don't. I'm a fixin' to go. You're not fixing anything. You're just standing there. Anyway, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, look, NWA. Straight Outta Compton. Great. I really enjoyed the film. Thought it was about as good as it could be. My biggest complaint was everything was so convenient. As John kind of said, it was from Dre and Cube. It was coming a lot from their side. Jerry Heller, who probably should be put in a negative light, but I don't know how negative he needs to be put, but obviously he disagreed with the assessment of the situation, because he's still suing them. The accuracy is an issue for one. And two, I didn't think some of the acting was as great as everybody said it was. Now, obviously, awards, people will disagree with me. I didn't think Mitchell was all that great. I didn't walk away from Straight Outta Compton thinking, boy, Mitchell did a really good job being Eazy-E. I mean, he kind of looked like him. You know, great. But, you know, so what?
We'll jump in here, Drew. Like, I would strenuously disagree on that one. Like, of the main three, Eazy-E, like, first of all, he had like the clearest arc, I would say, in the movie. Like, he had the longest way to go.
Well, he had to play a dead guy. I don't know how long he had to go, but.
Well, that dead guy doesn't show up.
Play dead guys all the time. What's the big deal?
It's more of a better role to play, because he does, and I'll admit this movie, and I love this movie. I'm higher than both you guys, I think, on this grade. But like he gets the best role to play of the big three. I think he does fantastic with it. Like he actually, like his character, I feel like has the most depth.
There was a part in there that really bothered me when he was like sitting there with his wife or the woman who was playing Tamika, and he goes, "You know what? Dre and Cube were really right. Jerry Heller was screwing me the entire time. Why didn't I think of that all those years ago?" And then he walked over to his house and said, "You're fired," like, you know, Trump, and then leaves. What is that all about? Where I doubt Eazy-E had that just epiphany that Cube and Dre were right the entire time, and now he's just going to realize.
I would disagree with your characterization of the scene where Dre fires Heller – or not Dre, where E fires Heller. But I would agree that, yeah, there are definitely some expositional clunky-ass lines in this movie.
Yes.
Dre was right, Q was right. Yeah, that's clunky.
You'd be gangbanging the books.
I mean, not the worst thing I've ever heard. But what's your label going to be called? Aftermath. Credits. Terrible. What a terrible, terrible, terrible.
Yeah, that was a really thing. What are you going to call your new label?
Would this have been better if they would have done an Eazy-E movie, like Avenger style? If they would have done Eazy-E, Dre, and Ice Cube, and then put it all together?
I doubt their lives were interesting enough to like warrant their own movie before they all got together. Yeah. This is where Bobby would have come in handy. Like, I don't know how old. I assume Dre and Cube were just teenagers.
Yes.
Well, Cube was the youngest one, wasn't he?
I think so.
Yeah.
He was the only one still in school.
Would you rather watch this after watching Dr. Dre and Ice Cube post Straight Outta Compton movie?
I understand that every studio wants to have like an extended universe type of
thing. I'm just saying, like, right, that's not what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
This is a long way to go for that.
Like, would it have been better? Like, would you rather see those two biopics than see Straight Outta Compton? Like, would that have been a better, like, depth for Dr. Dre and Ice Cube, or no? Because they're too involved.
Theoretically, if there was enough material there, just the more time you spend with the character, if a movie warrants that time, then sure, more time is always better. Like the alternate movie I proposed in my review or surmised. I'm not proposing anything, obviously.
You should.
No, was that I'll get Cube on the phone right now. Maybe I can catch him between Grudge Match, or not Grudge Match. What's that? Ride Along, between Ride Along sequels.
Yeah.
Just go deeper is what I wanted into like specific phases of their success.
How are you
and their
deeper, not make this a 4-hour, 5-hour movie?
I think if you cut out a lot of the stuff after they break up, like the breakup is the end of the movie.
Yeah. Okay. I agree.
Not E's death.
Like what? Yeah. Like
I like the stuff with Sacha death, but that's the end of the movie is when they break up.
Okay, so like Sacha Baron Cohen saying the end of the Queen movie should have been Freddie Mercury's death.
Yeah.
Whereas the rest
I
of the band
recently read something
going
about this. Yes. If in that specific case, like if E was the sole main character of this movie, then sure, end it with his death. But that's not the case. He's got to split a lot of time with Dre and Cube. And what's so frustrating about it is even some of that stuff with Dre and Cube after they leave is still pretty great on its own. Like Suge Knight, I don't have the actor's name in front of me, but I thought the portrayal of him was fantastic. Like one of the better villains of that summer when all these comic movies are coming out. Like you can barely remember Marvel villains for the most part. Suge Knight is such a great villain, and the way they film him in red, with red light, it's a very stark portrayal of someone who's like dragging these characters into hell. But it just doesn't really belong in this movie. I feel like leave the 2.5-hour long runtime, but spend more time on them getting together and finding their rhythm. Finding their chemistry, and then success, gradual dissolution and just spend more time with these characters, really get to know the characters more. Because as it is, it just seems like stuff is happening and there's less of a plot than there are things just happening.
Well, see, the movie could have been – I agree with you that after the breakup should be the end of the film. But I don't agree with you with the length of it. They don't need to keep it at 2.5 hours. That was too long. If they cut it to maybe 100 minutes and then just keep what they had of the band up until they broke up, that would have been a much more interesting film. And I would have given – that would have been like an A-plus for me, or even – well, maybe an A, because that second half of the film of them being individual was so slow and so simplistic. I couldn't it just was a drag on the film and of itself. But I think the best thing that this could have done, as I mentioned in my review, and Shane, since he's a big Beatle fan as well as I am, would agree with this.
I won't. Not even close.
I'm being facetious there. Is it would have best served?
Hey, wait, now you're insulting me.
What Drew's going to propose is that there's going to be a John Lennon movie,
and then at the
stingers of all those movies are going to be like Sam Jackson's going to show up and like you guys should form a group together, and then in like 2021 there'll be a Beatles movie and it'll
that's not what I'm getting at. That's funny though, but no,
so do
an NWA anthology type thing where you can actually interview the living members. And you can talk
to
the
documentary is what you're asking for,
and you can get an actual history and people's info and people's interview on the influence and what caused them to write these sort of things, and you can get a much more in depth and better chronology as to what happened, as opposed to some biopic that can now be characterized as something like Walk Hard. So. It's a good movie, but now biopics
biopics in general
in this Walk Hard type thing.
So for the Beatles movies, how many Yoko Ono movies do we make?
None.
I think
there's at least
two.
I think there's at least two, if not three. Trilogy in there.
John Lennon gets one, and then we got three Yoko Onos.
Yeah, I want to know about her. Yoko Ono's childhood. What was it like to grow up? Wherever she grew up, probably Japan.
Japan.
I don't know.
Yeah, and then what was it like? What was it like to be in her 50s and wealthy?
Yeah.
Beyond belief.
A whole epilogue movie.
Yeah, and I have no actual musical talent, but I'm wealthy for being a musician. What was that like?
The MMC taking bold stances. Not liking Yoko Ono.
What would it be like?
We're really pushing back against the zeitgeist here.
Yeah.
Everyone's pro Ono except for us.
She is really bad. Have you heard her music?
I have heard her music.
It is so bad.
It's so bad. It's not ideal.
I'd rather listen to an hour of Dead Easy.
just decomposing.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. It's probably peaceful in its own way.
So if you're listening right now, I'd like you to comment below in our website. Would you rather listen to an hour of Yoko Ono or Decaying Eazy-E? Okay.
It'll be a fun conversation.
I'd talk to Joe for 5 minutes. Which one would they rather do?
Wow!
Sick burn on the fellow MC.
Or me.
One contrarian fighting the other contrarian. It's like a two.
It's an immovable object fighting an unstoppable force.
No, it's just two unstoppable forces butting into each other.
Yeah,
like a couple of goats with horns.
Joe's Jesus and Drew's the burrito that Jesus has microwaved too hot for him to eat.
Oh.
I'm a burrito? What the hell?
I don't know. One of you had this thing. What are you going to do? You didn't get crucified, at least. any final things to say about Straight Outta Compton before you wrap up?
Oh, man.
This is a great movie. I did, maybe it's because I listened to a lot of rap at a formative age. Say A-minus me, got the feels. I got the feels from both these movies.
Yeah, I got the feels far more from Straight Outta Compton than E.T.
Yeah. I got no feelings.
Even though I graded them the same.
That's because you're a young black male?
Yeah.
Ah, thank you.
Yeah. Pretty much.
No, I love this movie so much.
I'm not a
wrinkled,
dummy alien.
I bought my son a White Sox hat. He's two. So, and the hat looks good on him. So.
And that was another thing, by the way. That also ticked me off.
Historical
White Sox hat
right.
was, yeah,
that was
okay.
not
I'm
the right
we got
White
that
Sox
out
hat.
Okay.
It should have a Raiders hat and then switched to White Sox hat later. Either way, if they were wearing a White Sox hat, that was not the correct White Sox hat. They should have the goofy character with a bat.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for saying that.
My final thing to say on this movie is, like, biopics have been trending towards, in the last, like, 3 or 4 years, with, like, Lincoln and Selma, to just pick one incident from a famous person's life, like the March to Selma or the passage of the 13th Amendment for Lincoln. Love and Mercy kind of does this. The movie about Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys that was released in the same year. And Straight Outta Compton, it does it like both. It's the entire life of NWA, even though most of the characters live outside of that group. But it's still like biopic problems really show up when you're trying to like put someone's whole life into a movie, which is just fruitless or like futile and impossible. And Straight Outta Compton, even though it's so good moment to moment, there's just a lot of Dewey Cox in this movie. Mm-hmm. And it's hard for musical biopics to exist when we've been walking hard for going on 10 years now.
I like Straight Outta Compton. I thought it was a good movie. I don't want anyone to think that I didn't like it. It's a very solid film. It deserves some praise. No question about that. I just think the best actor out of that entire group was Paul Giamatti. I think the second half of the film was not nearly as good as the first half of the film, and it could have been a much better film had they cut it to about 100 minutes and just kept to the band.
Sorry, that's a rap song. You guys probably don't know.
Drew, what have you been watching recently?
What
have I been watching?
I guess
Shane's interjecting.
What do you want to watch, or do you want to go, what's the better movie?
Yeah, sure. Let's do what's the better movie. We haven't done that in a while.
Shane's completely objective. Game. What's the better movie? I got a couple of rounds tonight.
Let's do it.
Awesome.
Some people in the MMC have been demanding more tangents and sections or whatever and games that we're going to play. We're going to give it to them.
Great.
So, what's
bait and
the
switch
better
and not do it?
What's the better movie? We're going to do Ice Cube tonight. Mm. Okay. Boys in the Hood or Three Kings?
Three Kings.
Why Three
Boys in the Hood.
Wow, all right.
Unlike E, I don't like after school specials.
You ain't gangbanging them books?
We reviewed Boys in the Hood for MMC, who knows when, 2014 maybe.
Yeah, that was one of my films.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Three Kings is a great movie. That's a very specific period of time. Boys in the Hood, it got pretty corny.
True. What's your answer?
Boys in the Hood.
I mean, why? I know that's what your answer was, but then why?
Oh, you want to know why?
Yeah, sure.
Because it's a better movie than Three Kings.
Well.
All right, well.
I'm going to, like, as much as I hate to
talks
say it.
About
Drew,
inner city violence.
Drew, that, Drew is that's correct what we need, here. That's what we Boys in the Hood know. Is the better movie.
Well.
But Drew,
well,
your
totally
reasoning
objective.
Is garbage, and I award you no points.
I will take no points. Thank you. May I have another?
Sure. How about Friday versus Barbershop?
Friday.
I've only seen Friday, so I'll say Friday.
That is the correct answer.
Okay.
Damn it. All right, we got
to
find it.
Man, I was so close to watching Barbershop. This is great pod. Drew, what have you been watching in the meantime?
How about Anaconda? Versus, we're going to do Ice Cube, Anaconda versus Ice-T in, oh shit, what's
the name? Law and Order SVU.
No, it's, fuck, Ice-T is in the game. It's something the game, right?
I got nothing.
It's
I have no
the,
idea.
Ah, damn it. It's,
I don't know everyone, any Ice-T films.
Ice-T.
I know Lipton Ice-T. Up.
This is great pod.
This is great pod.
Love it.
It's the movie where like he is a human being and they're trying to kill him, surviving the game.
I'm
Anaconda versus Surviving the Game.
They're both terrible. Anaconda.
I haven't seen either of those.
John, Anaconda's you pick terrible. Anaconda. What are you picking? Surviving the Game or Anaconda?
Anaconda doesn't that have
Ice-T,
like Australian John Boyd? I couldn't tell you a single thing.
In Surviving the Game, Ice-T is the most dangerous prey, a human being.
Okay. So it's like, okay. Hunting humans
hunting
kind of
humans.
Thing.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe what's his nuts from Third Planet from the Sun or
French Stewart?
No.
John Lithgow?
John Lithgow is in it.
Oh, well.
So.
Yeah, but Anaconda has Australian John Boyd, so I'll say Anaconda.
God damn it, guys. Surviving the Game was the correct answer. I tried to give Kiss the answer. You guys are terrible at this game.
Drew, what have you been watching?
That's a weird, like, he's not been watching Surviving the Game. These are so terrible.
I'm actually in the middle. I actually paused it to watch Black Snake Moan.
Oh, that's a great movie.
You guys have been telling me how great it is. It showed up on my 3-month preview of Showtime, and so that's what I was watching. And
you're halfway through.
Well, no, I'm a little towards the end. I think it's really odd, but
it's intense.
Yeah, it really is intense. As far as TV shows go, I'm still hesitant on starting the second season of Daredevil. I've been watching the Arrow, like the Green Arrow, just to get a view of that. But yeah, I also saw Suicide Squad. That's not nearly as bad as everyone says it is. Probably the best DC movie since The Dark Knight. So
that is saying essentially nothing.
I know, but still. Well, The Dark Knight's one of the best superhero movies ever. So that's what I've been watching.
So it's got to be better than like Man of Steel, is what you're saying.
It's better. It's yeah. It's better than Man of Steel. Way better than Batman versus Superman. Better than Dark Knight Returns or what? Or the third one in the Dark Knight series. Better. Even better than Batman Begins.
I'll conceivably give that a shot when it comes out on video.
It's worth the watch.
Because I hate myself. Shane, what have you been watching?
What have you been watching?
I recently saw a movie called Hunt for the Wilder People at the
Midtown
Arts Center.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what it's called. It's a movie from he clearly works pretty closely with the Flight of the Conchords guys. It's about a foster kid in New Zealand who goes to live with Sam Neill, who is a very gruff backwoodsman type, and Sam Neill's wife, and hijinks ensue. It's very funny. It's got a lot of sweet moments. The director's name is Taika Waititi, and he directed one of the best movies last year, another comedy called What We Do in the Shadows, about three vampires in a reality show.
Yes.
Starring Jemaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords.
That's up on my next pick.
That is an excellent, excellent movie. And Hunt for the Wilder People is also an excellent, excellent movie. Great. Shane, what have you been watching?
I said the jokingly, what have you been watching? Because we've basically been watching the same shit.
But true enough.
Basically the Olympics. We're watching The Night Of, which is fantastic. And from a lawyer's point of view, I'm pretty much 90% gung-ho on it. I think it's pretty accurate. We also rewatched Wet Hot American Summer.
The TV show.
Which is fantastic.
Shane's warmer on that than I am.
I think the first four episodes are fantastic. I think they're A+, and the first four episodes, the last four episodes are about a B.
It's got its moments, definitely. It's like there's an expectation in like modern comedies. And Shane, you mentioned that you don't watch a lot of comedies. You can't really get hooked into them as much as you used to be able to. But
right.
With something like Rick and Morty or BoJack Horseman or 30 Rock or that kind of stuff, where like the level of joke density, it's like every 5 seconds there's a joke that is just as well thought out and like mulled over as like any joke in the episode. Something for everybody, and it's just coming fast and furious. Like if that one doesn't work, don't worry, we've got another one coming for you in five seconds. Wet Hot American Summer is not the case there. It's just not as joke dense.
Well, I feel like the first four episodes are, and then the last four episodes kind of like, they're like, well, let's do a plot. How about that?
Maybe like every 20 seconds.
Maybe,
there's
yeah.
a joke. And I haven't seen the movie in such a long time, too. It's been a while. I bet if I watch the movie again, most of the jokes in the show are based on the movie.
Now I was,
like some kind of reference from the movie.
No, none of the jokes. No.
Okay, fair enough.
I disagree with that. But I was watching I was reading an interview with John Cleese from...
Cleese? From Monty Python?
Yeah.
Okay.
Talking about Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Okay.
And he basically said exactly what you just said, that there were not enough jokes in that movie. It was like, it got too serious.
Joke density, man. It's a real thing.
Like he didn't like the scene where the guys were saying, I'm being impressed. I'm like, which I love that scene. That was a great setup, which is exactly how I feel about modern liberals.
And
but,
that's why John Cleese is awesome, because he can be honest about his past work. And say, maybe we could have done better there, even if it's something as awesome as the Holy Grail. He's a cool dude. Didn't know that about him. That'll do us for this episode of the Mediocre Movie Club podcast. Follow us on the internet at mediocremovie.club. Like us on Facebook, Mediocre Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter, Mediocre Movie Cole. And, you know, a nice little 5-star review on iTunes. And then you can write whatever you want. It doesn't have to be good necessarily. Just the stars convey greatness and the comment.
Yeah. No one give us 5 stars and then give us a suggestion of what you can do better.
Yeah, like, I mean, we'll take anything.
If you have an
we'll
idea.
Take compliments, criticism, constructive or otherwise.
Yeah, if you have an idea for like some sort of like kind of game or section we can do that's better than Shane arbitrarily decides between movies and.
Or Mangles. Aesop's Fables?
Yeah, sure.
We could do Rotten Tomatoes on here.
Adam Kroll already does that. That is actually a very good Adam Kroll impersonation.
We're trying to be original. We already stole
it from
some bum on YouTube.
No, you did better than the first one, Drew. We could do Rotten Tomatoes.
We'll think of some. We can
but
do
Phil can't hack Google. So,
that's true.
Yeah. We would know.
We can do something better. We can look at better games, or you can come up with better games and tell us. And then if you have a better game, you can be on the show.
But okay. I think the conversation's pretty good, right,
this
guys?
This was a
well
good
done.
Combo.
Well done.
It's a very good combo.
Thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, Kissel.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, Kissel's up. Cheers.